Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
It was a piece of red plastic that started it all. Small, jagged, the kind of thing you'd barely notice in a parking lot unless someone was dead in the snow next to it. That's what the prosecution opened with in the Karen Reed trial on May 7th, 2025. Broken shards from a taillight, a single black sneaker, and some blood that stood out bright against the fading white snow. That's the story they're sticking with. The Karen Reed trial then reversed over to her boyfriend, Boston Police Officer John O'Keefe, sometime in the early morning hours of January 29th, 2022, after a night of drinking and fighting. She allegedly left him there in the snow after hitting him. That the evidence speaks for itself. That is what the prosecution is stating as of right now. But evidence only speaks if you ask the right questions and if the person holding it doesn't forget to put it in a bag. Trooper Connor Keefe was called to the stand to walk the jury through the basics of that scene. He's with the Massachusetts State Police assigned to the homicide unit under the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office. He showed up at 34 Fairview Road in the morning. John's body was found, and like any good crime scene tech, he got to work photographing, bagging, measuring, all of it done by the book or close enough to pass inspection at first. Keefe testified about what he collected that day, the most talked about item, those tiny pieces of red plastic believed to be from the rear taillight of Karen Reed's Lexus SUV. The implication from the state is clear. John O'Keefe didn't just fall in the snow. He was hit. Those plastic bits were the breadcrumbs leading back to Karen's garage. But as the prosecution tried to build a clean narrative, things did get a little bit messy. When the defense got their shot, they wasted no time pointing out a pretty significant oops. There was a third taillight fragment. The prosecution had it. The jury saw it. But Keefe admitted it wasn't originally bagged with the others. It had been left out, just sitting there, not logged, not secured, in a case that hinges on this car versus man collision theory. It's not a small detail. That's a brick missing from the foundation, depending on how you're looking at it. Now, nobody said the piece was planted or that it came from a different car, but when your central claim is that this vehicle shattered its taillight on a man's body and you can't even keep track of all the pieces? Although, look, this wasn't a great investigation, so I'm really not super shocked that, you know, there's still hiccups going on here. Gives the defense attorney an opening the size of a Lexus. The defense did run with it. They began peeling back the layers of Keefe's role in the investigation. And when they revealed wasn't exactly a masterclass in independent police work, because while Keefe collected the physical items and did some legwork, it turned out that the real architect behind much of the case file was another trooper. And his name, dun dun dun. I think we actually have some sound effects here. Let's try this one. Michael Proctor. And if you've been following this case, you've heard the name Proctor is the investigator the defense has been all but salivating to put on trial himself. He's the one who conducted key interviews, wrote major reports, and according to the defense, pushed a narrative from day one that Karen Reed was guilty. Keefe, by his own admission, didn't write those reports. He didn't analyze the bar surveillance footage. He didn't prepare the witness timelines. Proctor did. Keefe was the guy fetching the video drives. During cross, defense attorney David Unetti pressed Keefe hard on this dynamic, asked if he reviewed the reports Proctor submitted. Keefe said no. Asked if he had input on them. Again, no. And that's a problem for the prosecution, because if Proctor's objectivity in this is in question, at this point even the state has distracted themselves from him, then everything he touched is suddenly under scrutiny. And by extension, everything Keefe is presenting is in court. Yeah. But Keefe's involvement didn't stop at the crime scene. He also attended John O'Keefe's autopsy on January 31st. That's not that unusual. Law enforcement often attend autopsies to provide context or answer questions. But in this case, the context becomes contentious. Keefe told the court he spoke with the medical examiner during the procedure, gave them the facts as we knew them, and left it at that. But what does that mean? What were the facts as we knew them at that point? Was it just that a man had been found in the snow, or that Karen Reed was already being framed as the one who put him there, or what were they talking about? Unetti tried to push on this issue, asking whether the medical examiner had officially called it a homicide at that point. He wanted to get at something critical, the manner of death. Because in this case, the cause of death has always been listed as a mix of blunt force trauma and hypothermia. But the manner, that's still officially undetermined, which is legal shorthand for we're not ready to say who or what killed him. That alone gives the defense some breathing room. Unfortunately for them, the prosecution objected to that line of questioning, and the judge agreed. Keefe wasn't allowed to answer. Still, the moment was enough to plant the seed. If the state's own witness can't tell the jury whether the medical examiner believed this was a murder, how strong is the rest of their case is the question that some may ask. Well, that brings us to the broader issue the defense keeps coming back to. What they argue is a flawed and biased investigation. And they're not just poking holes in the evidence. They're suggesting the entire structure was built around a theory, not the other way around, that once police zeroed in on Karen Reed, everything got interpreted through that lens. Even the chain of custody becomes a story. Because when Keefe admits he didn't bag all the evidence and that another now discredited officer took the lead on writing reports, it casts a long shadow over the objectivity of the entire investigation. If the small details weren't handled right, how can we trust the big picture? And the jury is going to be looking at that. It all looks like sunshine and rainbows right now for the prosecution. And they've been doing a very good job. But keep in mind, part two hasn't even begun. We are still very much just kind of getting into the second quarter. To be clear, the prosecution on this case isn't giving ground. They've still got the plastic shards, the sneaker, the blood. The theory that a drunk, angry woman backed her car into her boyfriend, panicked, and left him there. And all of the clips and admissions by Karen Reed herself. It's simple, it's linear, it's the kind of case jurors can, you know, kind of follow. But simplicity only works when the building blocks hold up under pressure. And today, at least, a few of them cracked a little bit. Trooper Keefe might have come in to tell a straightforward story. What he ended up doing was show the jury how complicated the case really is. Even how the basic facts, what was found, who found it, and how it was handled can raise just as many questions as they answer, or at least give way to some folks who lean more conspiratorial. And that's just the physical stuff. Because what comes next? That's where the real drama starts, not in the snow, but in the phone, the search bar, in a single line of text that could blow the timeline wide open. It all comes down to a Google search, not a witness, not a confession, not a smoking gun or bloody glove. Just one search query typed into a phone. How's long to die in cold? We know this one. I know we've heard it 1,000 times. The entire defense timeline in the Karen Reed trial hinges on when that question was asked. And on May 7th, the prosecution brought in a digital forensic expert to tell the jury that time doesn't lie. Dr. Jessica Hyde is no stranger to the courtroom. She's a digital forensic specialist with years of experience analyzing smartphones, computers, and the digital breadcrumbs people leave behind. She took the stand to explain what happened on the phone of Jennifer McCabe, one of the key figures in the case. McCabe is the one who says she was with Karen Reed the morning John O'Keefe's body was discovered. She's also the one who Googled that disturbing question about dying in the cold, something the defense says happened before they found John, and something the prosecution says happened after. The difference between those two versions, about 4 hours, possibly Karen Reed's freedom as well. According to the defense, McCabe made the search at 2:27 a.m., which would suggest she somehow knew before they allegedly found him that John was outside in the cold. That theory fits nearly into the defense's broader narrative that John made it into the house that night. Something happened inside, and people are now covering it up. If McCabe really Googled that question at 2:27, the implication is chilling. She must have known he was already in distress. That would support the defense's claim that John's death didn't happen in the driveway. It happened after he walked into the house. But Hyde's testimony directly contradicts that. She told the court that the actual search did not happen at 2:27 at all. It happened at 6:24 a.m. hours later. Now the second expert on this to testify to this reality that no one wants to believe on the Karen Reed side. I know the truth does suck sometimes. After John's body had already been discovered, and she backed it up with digital forensic data. This is where things get technical, but the jury and anyone paying attention, and it was difficult at times, needed to understand the distinction. Hyde explained that when you open a browser tab on an iPhone, the tab is assigned to a timestamp, but that timestamp doesn't necessarily reflect what happens inside the tab. It's because a browser tab was accessed or opened at 2:27 a.m. doesn't mean that the user Googled something at that time. It just means the tab was in use or opened. Think of it like an outline. Chapter one. Okay, so we got all these things that happen in chapter one. Are they all happening exactly at the beginning of that chapter because it's all in one? No. You work through it. Unfortunately, the phones were just listing things as that at that time. And it was demonstrated in court. Exactly how that works, and yeah. Not the greatest look for, I guess, the cell phone companies that were maybe the time stamping was not exactly as accurate as they said it was or we thought it was. But that's been updated now. Just as all things get updated when cell phones find glitches and there's weird things like that that take place. And when you find out the truth and that truth completely contradicts your story, you got to do something. So you gotta go and say, that's wrong, no matter what. We're just gonna stop over here. I know you can dig further and get more information, but we just want to stop right here. This is the century we're stopping at. Hyde clarified that the how's long to die in cold search was done within that browser tab, but the actual Google query, the keystrokes, the pressing of enter all happened much later. Based on her forensic analysis of Jennifer McCabe's phone, Hyde determined that the search occurred at 6:24 a.m. That's a critical difference because at 6:24 a.m. they had already found John in the snow. By then, they were calling 911. They were panicking. They were, as the prosecution argues, trying to understand just how much time had passed and how much damage the cold had done. This version of the timeline destroys the defense's theory. It eliminates the idea that Jennifer McCabe somehow knew John was in danger before they found him. It turns the search from a potential admission of guilt into a desperate attempt to understand what just happened. It's a difference between conspiracy and confusion. Because, you know, she's up there searching how's long to die in cold and then basketball information. And then putting on the nightcap and catching a little rerun of SNL and passing out. as her friend dies in the front lawn. Oh, and then gets woken up and acts just completely normal and goes and helps her friend, I'd say that roughly. She barely knew, go and try and find her friend that she's very close with and very concerned about as well. He just happens to be screaming, did I hit him? Could I have hit him? I hit him. I don't think it even matters if she says I hit him at this point. It's why would she be asking that? I think he was hit by a snowplow. John's dead. These are all statements she made. So I don't know what the question is here. Question is more intent or knowledge of the accident. The defense didn't take any of this lying down. Attorney Bob Alessi launched a cross-examination, if you want to call it that, designed to poke holes in Hyde's testimony and conclusions from her and her credibility. First, he challenged her on the technical side. He pointed out that parts of Hyde's written report used Coordinated Universal Time, UTC, while other portions used Eastern Standard Time. That kind of discrepancy can confuse people reading the report and open a door for misinterpretation. Hyde acknowledged that the time conversion could be unclear, but reiterated that the local time of the search was 6:24 a.m. The forensic tools log data in UTC by default, but her interpretation had accounted for the correct time zone. So there you go. Math. Alessi then went on after the tools themselves. He asked why Hyde had relied on third-party forensic software instead of using Apple's proprietary source code. Wouldn't Apple's own internal data be the gold standard? Hyde replied that source code isn't available to outside analysts. Apple doesn't hand it out. Surprise! What digital forensic experts like her do instead is rigorously test and validate the tools they can use. The process is widely accepted in the field and used in courtrooms across the country. It's not about having Apple's exact blueprint. It's about running repeatable, consistent analyses that hold up under scrutiny. Still, the defense wasn't done. Alessi pivoted to something more personal. Hyde's professional history. Specifically, he wanted to bring up a past courtroom case from Maryland where Hyde's work had been questioned. He argued that the jury had a right to know about this history, that it spoke about her credibility, but Judge Beverly Cannoni had already ruled earlier in the day that the Maryland case couldn't be introduced. It wasn't relevant to this trial, and bringing it up could unfairly prejudice the jury. So every time Alessi tried to hint at it, the prosecution objected, and the judge shut it down. Still, the tension was very thick. The implication lingered in the room, even if the details never made it in. Then came another credibility attack. Hyde's communications with law enforcement. Alessi pressed her about her contact with Lieutenant Brian Tully, a state police officer who had supervisory involvement in the O'Keefe case and who was also linked to Michael Proctor, the same Proctor who's been accused of mishandling key parts of the investigation. Hyde acknowledged that she had spoken with Tully maybe 10 to 20 times during her analysis. The defense framed this as a possible red flag, suggesting that her work might have been influenced consciously or unconsciously by someone close to the center of the state's case. But Hyde pushed back. She testified that her analysis was independent, that no one told her what to say or how to interpret the data, and that her conclusions came from the raw evidence on McCabe's phone, not from conversations with investigators. One of the most damning things, she said, had nothing to do with timestamps or search logs. It was about deletion, or rather the lack of it. One of the defense's insinuations in earlier phases of this case was that Jennifer McCabe had possibly tried to delete the Google search, either to hide her own guilt or someone else's. Hyde told the court that was not possible. The data had not been deleted. In fact, a user can't even manually delete this type of search record the way you might clear your history in a browser. It's a background log, part of the system's metadata. It's not something you can just swipe away. That's big. Because if the search happened at 6:24 a.m., then there's no way to backdate or manipulate it. The defense can't argue it was faked. They can't argue about how to interpret it. They can challenge Hyde's methodology, but they can't claim the data itself was doctored or erased. It's just their cold, hard, time-stamped truth. Still, Hyde's testimony wasn't without friction. The cross-examination was aggressive. The objections were frequent. The courtroom saw its fair share of eye rolls and tense silences. But the prosecution left that day with a witness who had not crumbled. A digital record that, if the jury believes it, pulls the rug out from under the defense's timeline. Because if Jennifer McCabe didn't know John was in the snow at 2:27 a.m., then maybe Karen Reed was the one who knew. And maybe she's been trying to rewrite that timeline ever since. Next day in court, pivots again, this time towards more forensic experts and maybe a closer look at the Lexus itself, because with and while the search history may be timestamped, the question that remains is what really happened in those dark, icy hours before the sun came up that morning. What do you think? Tell me in the comments section. Kind of a less day. But I think we could all use that. It's been very contentious and very dramatic, I would say, for a long time. And the impact of today was also very dramatic. It was just a long time getting to it. And a long time of a bad cross-examination that you almost kind of felt for the guy a little bit. It's like, you're trying. You're not going to win this, but you're trying. Anyway, let me know what you think. Press subscribe wherever you are downloading podcasts. And also check out our YouTube channel if you're not already there. If you're there, hi, happy you are here. Press subscribe, please, while you are here, so you don't miss any of our coverage in this case and all the others that we cover for you here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. My name is Tony Bruschi, and thank you so much for listening and watching, and we will talk again real soon.
Want to stay on top of the latest true crime cases? Press subscribe now and never miss a breaking update from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.